always very ironic when I have the good fortune of being in the presence of His Holiness Jayad Rita Maharaj, because as I was telling him again today while we had lunch, how he was one of the first Hare Krishna devotees that I saw in this lifetime, anyway. And the situation was quite interesting in that my first reaction upon seeing such swan-like devotees on television was not one of appreciation, but one of ridicule.
No.
In this way, you can understand how potent Krishna consciousness is, that it can pull out from the darkest regions of ignorance such an entity as myself. I have to be honest and confess that when I turned on the television my last month at university to get some relief from writing my thesis, I saw devotees there on television, and I couldn't figure out what they were about. Who are these strange aliens? And as I often explain, my flatmate and I, he was preparing for his physics final at Yale, we would watch television with the volume turned down all the way because we were representatives of the finest students the USA, and we were Yale students, so we could not watch television in an ordinary way. We had to do it in a very aristocratic and distinguished way. So our style was to watch television with the volume turned all the way down and speculate on what was happening. As we culminated our fourth year of study at a place which now costs $28,000 a year. So I said, turn up the volume. Who are these strange people? And there I saw Jayadvaita, the Brahmachari then, and other devotees. And I listened to them explain their precepts, their vision, their lifestyle, especially the part about purified living, controlling the mind and senses. When I heard that, I still, to this day, remember my exact words. These people are fools. They have missed the goal of life. We should invite them to one of our parties. We'll teach them what bliss is. Things turned out differently than what I had planned. And 7 months later, I was living in the Brahmachari Ashram. I always remember this young, beaming face lit up like an electric bulb. You might wonder how someone could come to Krishna consciousness after possessing such a viewpoint of ridicule. Well, I was always interested in the best knowledge and the best pleasure. That was my reputation at the university. Wherever there was the most insightful knowledge and wherever there was the most, the juiciest pleasure, that's where I would be found. So So I was, a month after I finished school, I was going somewhere in the New York metropolitan area. And I ran into a devotee. Actually, he didn't approach me. I just looked and saw a strange person. And I was always interested in reading different things. So I approached him and said, "What do you got there?" And he showed me some literature. And I purchased. And then, of course, to be honest, I didn't pay for the book, even though I had money, because my companion in illusory activities was approaching. And as a typical cosmopolitan, sophisticated New Yorker, I naturally, you know, with the girlfriend approaching, you know, you ask her to pay for it. You know? It's the age of color, you know. Would you expect anything else? I said, "Give him some money, give him some money." I had, you know, money in my pocket, but, you know. So she just laughed. You know, he's always doing so many interesting, you know, extraordinary things. That's why I like his company so much. She didn't know what she was paying for. By her handing over some money so I could get this book, she was radically changing the course of my life and her life. So, at her house, while she was in the kitchen, I sat on the couch in the room and started reading this book, small book, Transcendental Teachings of Prahlada Maharaj. And by the time I got into page 4 or 5, I was just devastated. I'd never read anything like this in my life. Especially when I got to the part where Srila Prabhupada, paraphrasing the teachings of Prahlada Maharaj in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam, said that the taste of sense gratification is the same in any species of life. Oh my God. I can't believe it. I'm getting the same taste that the cat or dog gets. And I just slumped over on the couch, just collapsed. And then the young lady came running out of the kitchen. "What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong?" I immediately just, nothing, nothing, nothing at all. But I made it, I resolved in my mind that the next day I would go out looking for more books by this Swami whose name I couldn't pronounce. So indeed I did that the next day. I went to Greenwich Village in New York City and went to one of the cool, trendy bookshops, and there I found a Bhagavad Gita by Srila Prabhupada and a concise rendition of Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So I bought both of them, read them in a few days. But I was sure, in no way did I want to have anything to do with devotees, strange-looking people who had no practical value for the world. So I would order my books through mail order from Los Angeles. That way I would never have to approach a devotee. Thinking they're hippies. They're not doing anything for the suffering of the world. They have no solutions for the oppression and exploitation in the world. As if I had any solutions. That was part of the consciousness back then amongst university students, that we should always be mindful of capitalism and imperialism and thisism and thatism. And meanwhile, all the students did was take intoxication and engage in Kali Yuga activities, but while spouting so much political rhetoric. Indeed, I had become already disenchanted the first year of my university life, I became disenchanted with politics, even though everything was politicized and the war in Vietnam was going on, civil rights, this, that, the other. So I was part of, practically every student then was part of some radical student group on campus. If you weren't part of a radical student group, you were strange. So I remember the political organizers were having, of this huge student group, were having a special weekend. There weren't girls at Yale at that time. So the girls would be bussed in from the prestige girls' schools like Vassar and Radcliffe and Wellesley. And so, naturally, in order to properly discuss the revolutionary issues, you needed the girls there. For a weekend, especially. That helped the mind to be clear, and your analysis of political issues would be much more lucid in your association. So, we attended a meeting for organizing the weekend. There'd be seminars, workshops, walks through various neighborhoods in the city to see how the people are doing and to relate to them. The whole schedule was presented. And everyone was enthusiastic and shouting slogans. And then came the grand culmination. One of the organizers stood up and said, "All right, we've got the seminar schedule figured out. We've got the tour through the communities figured out. And now, for the moment everyone's waiting for, it's time to speak about the party." Everyone roared, "Yeah!" I was wondering, wait a minute, what's happening with the revolution here? And then it got even worse. He began to explain that the party will go on until 2 in the morning. Things were quite subdued and modest back then, 2 in the morning. And revolutionary brothers and sisters, actually it was just brothers there at that point, revolutionary brothers, if 2 o'clock comes around and you haven't struck up something with a fine revolutionary sister, if you failed and you haven't made it to a motel room with one of the sisters, why don't you come on back and help clean up the party floor? What is the point of all this? So then and there I decided, enough of politics. This is ridiculous. So I was always looking for something that would indeed resolve the ultimate issues. In my last year, during my search for the ultimate knowledge, I decided to make the ultimate sacrifice. I think I might have explained before. I would take a course in Hinduism taught by a world-famous professor. He's still considered a top gun in the field of Hinduism. Why was this an extraordinary sacrifice? This course met at 8 o'clock in the morning. And as a genuine, bona fide student, we wouldn't think of getting up until 11 a.m. and dashing off to 11:30 class. But I wanted to understand Hinduism. So indeed, I went to this course at 8 o'clock in the morning. I'll never forget what an austerity it was to wake up at 7:30, throw on some clothes and race out the door. But I wanted to understand what is Hinduism. So the world-famous professor gave his course outline. And he explained that today's assignment, your first assignment, is to read a section of the Upanishads and write a paper based on what you think it means. And my reaction was, wait a minute. I've gotten up at 7:30 in the morning to take this 8 o'clock class just to hear a professor tell me to write a paper and speculate. I don't need to get up at 7:30 in the morning just to speculate. I can do that any time. I said, forget this course. I'll go to the university library. I'll go to the university bookshop. And with the reading list for the course, I'll just get all the books and I'll read them on my own. So I did a lot of dry texts, one was called Yoga, Immortality, and Freedom, a completely dry academic analysis of Ashtanga Yoga. I just took one look at that, a few pages of it. This is completely boring. Push that aside. Another one was a Bhagavad Gita by an Englishman named Edgerton. So I said, oh, the Bhagavad Gita, the jewel of India's spiritual thought. Let me look at that. He had his verses in the first half, and the second half he had his commentary. So I just started flipping through his commentary. And mind you, I had a certain mindset, typical of the time. Everything was analyzed in terms of politics and exploitation and colonialism and imperialism. Anyway, through that mindset, some other Krishna saved me. I turned to a page of his commentary where he stated, I'll never forget this, Krishna is a concept meant to satisfy both the sentimentalists and the intellectuals. And I just read, I looked at that, and I slammed the book shut and threw it against the wall. How dare this British imperialist ruin the Indian people's book? How dare this colonial overlord, fascist, dare to interpret this sacred book of the downtrodden Indian people? So anyway, through that political mindset, Krishna, some or other, saved me. And so I never read any other books for the course and never went back to class. Then I came upon Srila Prabhupada's books. As I said, I got the books through mail order, and I read them 4 hours a day for 6 months straight without going to a temple once or a center once. That's how sure I was that I would have nothing to do with the Hare Krishnas, strange people, hippies, wearing strange clothes, exotic culture. I was staying with my father. He had his apartment in 90th Street, Central Park West in New York, just a little bit away from where Urmila Mataji is from. And so he would see me reading these books and he would say, oh, you're into the downtown people's books, huh? That's how we refer to it. That downtown religion. That religion of the impractical, countercultural hippies who are doing nothing for the problems of the world. And I just didn't answer. I just kept reading 4 hours a day for 6 months straight. And then I had read everything twice. Gita, Krishna book, Nectar of Devotion, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Isha Upanishad, everything that was out, I had read twice. I needed a new book. I was addicted. So finally I said to myself, I have to take a risk and approach a devotee. You see, what happened was that because I was getting my books from mail order, they had my name on their list, so the mail order sent me a notice in the post that very soon the deluxe edition of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, would be available. And they described it in very mouth-watering terms for me, the spiritual encyclopedia, knowledge of the material world and the spiritual world. And I looked at that and said, I can't wait for this to come in the post. I've got to have it now. I've got to have it tonight. All right, it's worth it, taking a risk. Talking to a devotee. So I got up my courage and put on my long suede coat and went to a big bus terminal in New York, Port Authority, to look for a devotee. And I saw some devotees there distributing amidst 5,000 people walking back and forth in this huge bus terminal. So I would walk past one particular devotee one time, two times, to see if she would stop me. So finally, I decided I'll go up and say something to her. So I thought I was just going to present something that was quite ordinary. I was going to say something that was commonplace and easily understandable and no big deal. I walked up to her and said, "Excuse me, do you have Srimad Bhagavatam?" Looked at me like... And she was very expert. She controlled herself like... "Oh, how do you know about that book?" I said, "Look, don't ask me any questions. I just want the book. I don't want to talk to you. Just give me the book. I'll give you money and we'll leave it at that." No, this is very interesting that you're asking for Srimad Bhagavatam. And she kept trying to engage me in conversation, and I was just determined. Anything to do with you people. I just want the book. Do you have Srimad Bhagavatam? And so she wouldn't give in. She just went on and on. And then she pulled out a brochure saying, "Oh, by the way, we're trying to get a new building in New York City. Just take a look at the plans. It's going to have theater, restaurant, library, this, that. Surely you'd be very interested in this." Yeah, I admit it. Yeah, that sounds good. Theater, library, restaurant, places I can go to without being committed, without having to become one of you guys. Like a cultural center, drop-in center. So, still, you know, I just wanted the book and wanted to leave. Then she said, "You know, you could probably help out and give a donation for this center we're trying to get." I said, "Me give a donation? I have never given a penny in charity in my life, and I don't plan on doing it now. Do you have Srimad Bhagavatam?" She wouldn't answer the question. "You should help. You have read so many books. This is the most important cause." No. Finally, I remember saying, "Look, I'll leave you money in my will." I was 21 years old, So she immediately pointed out, "Oh, you don't even have a will." What 21-year-old has a will, you know? Then I gave my ultimate weapon. "And look, I don't have any money with me. It's all at my father's place." And she said, "Oh, really? Let's go." Oh, my goodness. Is she mad? I, a sophisticated New Yorker, Manhattan dweller, that's like living in, in Soho, ultimate sophistication. I am going to go to my father's flat with someone looking like you? Because back then the ladies no one had gone to India yet, so they weren't really wearing the saris like you have on. It's just that the married ladies would wear yellow saris, just, solid yellow and a gray sweatshirt. And the unmarried ladies would wear a pink sari, basically a bed sheet, yellow bed sheet, pink bed sheet with gray sweatshirt. So I was thinking, there's no way I'm going anywhere with someone looking like you. My reputation in the city will be finished. Anyway, she insisted. Somehow or other, I agreed after 20 minutes of arguing, and we and on the subway, 20 minutes uptown in Manhattan, and got to my father's apartment building. Lived on the 14th floor, so I told him, you stay down here. And I went, I'm not bringing you up there. You just stay down here. I'll come down with some money. So I did that. I went up, came out my checkbook. And somewhere or other, I was inspired to make a gesture of supreme generosity. I wrote out a check for $1,000. Honey ball. I handed her the check for $1,000. I mean, mind you, I had never given a penny in my life in charity, not even to political causes, not even to radical causes. So I handed her the check for $1,000. She took it, looked at it. This is very nice, but I would like to ask you for $2,000. I was just stunned. I just couldn't believe it. My mouth dropped. And she was so determined and so just so clear about it. Not in a forceful way, but just, look, you have read so many books about Krishna. You know everything belongs to Krishna. I'm simply requesting you to give Krishna what belongs to him. What can I say? I read so many books. And then, from my perception of the situation, the Lord in the heart tricked me. I heard a voice say inside, you'd better give her what she wants, because right now, in all the surrounding apartment buildings, people are looking out of their windows at you. And they're seeing you talk to this strange-looking girl. Give her what she wants. Get rid of her real quick before your reputation in the neighborhood is ruined. The fact was, I didn't know anyone in the neighborhood, but still. I thought, this makes sense, yes. All right. I said, I'll go upstairs. No, I pulled out my checkbook and said, okay. I tore up that check and wrote out a check for $2,000. And I still didn't have any Srimad Bhagavatam. Turned out that the devotees in New York hadn't received their shipment yet. But she never let on to that. All right. So anyway, that was the end of that, I thought. 2 weeks later, I was going through the bus terminal on my way back to Yale to visit a companion of the illusory energy. And there I saw the same devotee and a few other devotees. And they all saw me coming. It's him! It's him! Oh, no, it isn't. It's not him. No way. Come on over here. We got some nice food for you. It's called prasad. Yeah, just come over to these lockers here. Let's just talk a bit. Where are you going? Oh, you don't really want to know, do you? Oh, yeah, they were smart ladies. Oh, we know what that means. Well, how are you going to go on wasting your time with her? I said, well, I mean, wasting time. Well, you know these things. How these things go in material nature? Haven't you read a lot of the books? Yeah, I've read a lot of the books. Anyway, wouldn't you like to make another donation today? Oh, again, I argued for a half hour. Didn't do any good. Again, I made the trip to my father's flat. Came down with my checkbook and wrote out a check for another $2,000. So then the devotee looked at me and said, you know, you've given so much money. Why don't you come to the temple and see what it's like? That makes sense. You know, you should give a lot of money. I should go and see how the money is utilized. Given $4,000, never even been to their place. So I worked up enough courage one Sunday to make the trip to Brooklyn, to Henry Street, to the temple. And I remember feeling so uneasy about it. And as I approached the place, I could smell the incense, you know, 3 blocks away. And I opened the door. As soon as I opened the door, there was a wonderful receptionist waiting. Nice brahmachari, tall brahmachari. As soon as I opened the door, "Welcome, brother, you've come to the right place." Totally dissipated my anxiety in a split second. "Just come on in, take off your shoes, go on into the temple room, move your feet around, warm up a bit." And there I saw, in person, Jayadvaita Brahmachari, who I'd seen on television. He doesn't remember, I'm sure. I even talked to him a bit and make sure he was for real. And then 2 months later, I was living in the Brahmachari ashram. I remember, though, my greatest fear was that some of my past associates would find out where I was and come and try to, you know, rescue me. And back then, everyone would go on Harinam all hours of the day and night. And so my great fear in going out on Harinam was that some of my former associates would see me. And indeed, one day it happened. There, we were doing Harinam. You know, I had my official Hare Krishna clothes and outfit of the early 70s, you know, sneakers. My socks did match. And, you know, these bright orange polyester dhotis, you know, that wouldn't lay flat, they would balloon out. And so there we were, you know, chanting Hare Krishna. And then I saw a bunch of them, you know. These elite ladies from Vassar and Radcliffe, and "Look at that! Is that him?" They're all decked out in the finest fashions and jewelry and hairstyle, you know. And right in the middle of the Harinam party, they just walked up to me. I felt like I just wanted to disappear into the crack in the pavement, you know. But I survived that. In any case, when I told this story to His Holiness Bhakti Chuu Maharaj, he said, "Well, now I'm referring to himself." He said, "Now I'm a firm believer now. Anyone can become Krishna conscious." And it is a fact that anyone can become Krishna conscious. It is not that Krishna is partial. He gives instruction to everyone. What is Krishna doing in our heart? He's fulfilling your desires in that he's reminding you of your desires and showing you opportunities for your attempt to fulfill your desires. But simultaneously, he's also telling you, "Do you really want to do this? Don't you remember who you really are?" And he is generating opportunities for you to turn to him. So it's not that Krishna is simply lazy or inactive in your heart. He's all the time working on our behalf, but we don't hear that. And because we are so persistent with our material program, Krishna regretfully, so to speak, reluctantly, fulfills those desires. But his instructions are there for everyone. His prodding to come to him, that's there for everyone. But we don't listen. We shouldn't think that Krishna is partial in terms of his giving everyone a chance to be Krishna conscious. In fact, when Maharaj Yudhisthira was arranging the Rajasuya Yajna, the Rajasuya sacrifice, he told Krishna, I want to do this to establish your real identity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm going to invite all the demigods. It may seem that this yajna is for pleasing the demigods, but actually I'm bringing them all here from their celestial regions. I'm bringing them here so they can see that they are all subordinate to you. I'm going to establish in their eyes very clearly that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What do we Pandavas have to do with worshipping demigods? We are your personal associates. We don't have to go to them for any benefits. But we need to show for the people in general that by serving you, Krishna, everything is accomplished. Just like one waters the tree at the root, all the branches blossom. I want to publicly demonstrate that. I want to show the difference between someone who's a devotee and someone who's not a devotee. I want to show the difference in the destination. The destination is achieved one way by the devotee, another way by the non-devotee. They're going different places. I want to clearly establish this for everyone to see. Therefore, I like to perform this Rajasuya Yajna, this sacrifice. Try to understand the scope of Yudhisthira Maharaj's government. It took in interplanetary influences. Yudhisthira was not simply inviting earthlings. He was inviting demigods up to the stature of Brahma and Shiva. He was inviting representatives of all the planets to come to this yajna to see Krishna. What was Krishna's response? He said, everyone, your ancestors, all the people, the leaders of different planets, they all agree that you should do this sacrifice. And I also agree. Your fame and glory will spread by this sacrifice. Of course, Yudhisthira was not thinking of his fame or glory. He's thinking of Krishna's fame and glory. But Krishna is thinking of his devotee. This is reciprocation. Now, the Acharya Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura adds an interesting insight. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura says that Krishna was thinking, but wait a minute. It's very good that you're doing this sacrifice, Yudhisthira, but it could make me look bad. It could make me look immoral in that if you clearly show how one result's attained by the devotee and another result's attained by the non-devotee, if you clearly show the difference between the bhakta, the devotee, and the abhakta, the non-devotee, and show how they attain different destinations, people could accuse me of being partial to the devotees. My reputation could be injured by this yajna if people see so clearly that one result's attained by the devotee, another result's attained by the non-devotee. Then Yudhisthira replied that, who can blame you? You are the super soul in everyone's heart. And because you're there in everyone's heart, everyone has an equal chance to turn to you. Because in everyone's heart, you're constantly giving them guidance to come back to you as you fulfill their unfortunate desires. There's no way that you can be blamed. Everyone has a chance to come to you. Everyone has a chance to receive your special treatment as your devotee. We should think about that. What are we doing with our chance to be Krishna conscious? I'm sure that everyone here is much more fortunate, even if you're just beginning your interest in Krishna consciousness, you're much more fortunate than I was. I doubt if anyone here ridiculed devotees the first time you saw devotees. Everyone here has the chance to take seriously what Krishna says. Therefore, we have to wonder about our receptivity. What's gumming up the works? What's inhibiting our spiritual progress if indeed Krishna is equal to everyone? Everyone has a chance to be favored by Krishna. So what's stopping us? We are stopping ourselves. We have to look at our lifestyle. We have to look at our goals. Look at our day-to-day existence and see how through certain activities and mindsets we are pushing Krishna away. Please be brave enough and strong enough to take a deep look. How much are we really interested in connecting to the Supreme Person through love? Loving Krishna is the most serious thing in life. It is the most pleasurable thing, and it's the most serious thing. Krishna is not a joke. He's not a creation of someone's imagination. A relationship with Krishna is the real thing. Deep in our hearts, is there some kind of resentment against Krishna? I could tell a short story. But what is our time? A little embarrassing. So, naturally, I was trying to interest my companion in the illusory energy in taking to Krishna consciousness. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. So, she wasn't very interested. And I thought, to help the situation, I had a great idea. While I was at the temple gift shop, I saw they had some... Back then, you see, Spiritual Sky was a devotee company for making incense and soaps and cosmetics and so on and so forth. So in the temple gift shop, I saw Govinda's shampoo. I said, I'll get her a gift. That'll do it. Govinda's shampoo. Anyway, later, Grihasthas told me that you obviously weren't very well learned in the arts. You know, nothing so romantic about a bottle of shampoo. But I thought, it's your Govinda on the front of it. What? Certainly, this is very appropriate. So I purchased the bottle of Govinda shampoo. Picture of Krishna on the front playing a flute. And I went to her house and I very proudly presented her with the gift. She took it out of my hand and disappeared into the bathroom. And then came out with the bottle in one hand and a razor blade in the other. And then she started scraping the picture of Krishna off the front of the bottle. So what are you doing? What are you doing now? This is Krishna. Has given me so much pain, taking you away from me. Immediately I knew what to do. The next day I went to the temple to consult with the devotees. The first devotees I ran into were some lady devotees. Indeed, the same group that had relieved me of my finances. I explained what happened, and they just looked at me. She's anti-Krishna. Oh my God, she's anti-Krishna.
No.
It doesn't look good. I said, but maybe, you know, surely Krishna doesn't want me to hurt her. You know, I gave all these usual excuses, which I myself have heard from others so many times in the past 30 years. Krishna wouldn't just want me to just drop it and hurt her. So the lady devotees were smart. They just didn't say much, just, But I thought about that. And then, as I was leaving, one of the lady devotees said, wait, just one moment. I want to tell you something. This may sound strange coming from me, but this is Maya. I heard a bell go off in my head. Dong. Maya. I said, oh, I have to make some adjustments. So anyway, Krishna is in the heart. He is not lazy. He's not inactive. He is constantly making arrangements for devotees to come to him. Just so you don't have any unnecessary paranoia, many devotees come to Krishna consciousness with their companions. For me, it wasn't destined to be. Krishna is fair to everyone. We have to look at our response to Krishna. Take a good look at your life. Take a good look at your priorities. And be honest about what you want, where you want to go. And see how much we are listening to Krishna, how much we are applying what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita to our life. We're not talking about religious belief. We're not asking whether you believe in Krishna or whether you don't. Krishna doesn't ask that question in Bhagavad Gita. Do you believe in me? He just tells you, mamanabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhavabhav program. Mayasakta manaparta yogam yunjanmanasraya. Arjuna, I'm going to teach you how, with your mind attached to me, you can know me fully without any doubt. Just listen. Because you're not envious of me, I'm going to teach you how you can be free from all the miseries of material existence. This is Krishna's program. Action. The more we apply Krishna's program, the more we see the reality of Krishna consciousness. We're talking about something far beyond religious belief. We are talking about the best lifestyle, the lifestyle of purity, real knowledge, and genuine satisfaction. So I thought I would walk a bit down memory lane. I can blame it all on Jai Dwayne Maharaj. So please look at your approach to Krishna consciousness and see how you may not be listening to Krishna. You may not understand how Krishna is in your heart working on your behalf. It's not that you're alone and unaided in your efforts to be Krishna conscious. Try to see what you've got going for you and take advantage of all the resources made available to you. All right. Hare Krishna. Jainatai says that there can be a question or two if you have any.
Hare Krishna, people.
Yes.
Pleased to meet you. I've seen some pictures of you many years ago, but I've had the privilege of being in your company. There's one question I want to ask. Hope it's not a difficult one. Are you married?
That particular path of life eluded me somehow.
time you get complete sort of spiritual enjoyment from just chanting.
That anyone can have. That's the recommended process given in Bhagavad Gita by Lord Krishna. Use your senses for the pleasure of the master of the senses. Then there is genuine pleasure. That's real yoga. Real yoga doesn't mean simply becoming flexible in your joints, although there's nothing wrong with that. It's just not a very high goal. Real yoga involves using your senses to please Krishna, who is the master of the senses. That can be done by anyone, whether you're married or not. There's a way how to do everything in Krishna consciousness, and that you can learn here. That's what they pay me for. I've been waiting for 35 years for my check, but anyway. Anyone can cover himself or herself by simply saying what Krishna says. Then we're doing our job, just like the postman or the post lady. Or as they say down under, the postie. That avoids the gender complications. The postie just delivers the post. He doesn't open the envelopes and try to change what's inside there. So one thing you can be sure of here is that the post is delivered unchanged, straight from Krishna to you. All right? Yes.
Oh, Hare Krishna. I'm not a devotee yet. Very interesting.
I'm still trying to be also.
Very interesting. I'm very interested in multitude of religions, and in fact, sort of got God is love touching across my chest, but God, not any kind of, not pinpointed him yet. But one of the things that seems to come across is this pleasure is often used in religious connotations. But there seems to be a very sharp definition between religious pleasure and the mortal world pleasure and material pleasure. Is it a question of having experienced the material world pleasure and then change route to the spiritual world pleasure? You feel it is of a higher order, and it's something that one pursues instead of, or you know, if you understand what I'm trying to express here, it's like, is it something that you experienced and said, right, that was good, but I want something better, and I tried this other route, now this is better, of a higher order, or is it something that you never really pushed in either in the latter direction?
Well, let's put it this way.
So if I explain myself properly.
I'm glad that you're interested in what is lower pleasure and higher pleasure. A human being should be interested in those issues. A human being should not simply act with his or her senses without discrimination. So you have to understand what's best. There is lower pleasure, which is very flickering, very almost practically non-existent except as an idea in your mind. And then, as you become purified through the bhakti yoga process, the Krishna conscious process, you find out through experience that you have spiritual senses which, in their connection to the pleasure of Krishna, generate pleasure for yourself without even you're having to think about it. In other words, a real devotee, something you and I want to be, a real devotee doesn't worry about his or her pleasure. The real devotee is worried about the pleasure of Krishna. And when Krishna is satisfied, you'll be satisfied also because you're a part of Krishna. When you put food into your mouth, are you in anxiety? Will my finger or my wrist get the benefit? Huh? Do you ever get, are you ever haunted by anxieties? Oh no, I just ate something. Will my finger be nourished? No. You accept that naturally, by the authorized process of eating, the whole body is going to become energized. Krishna consciousness is that real. By using your senses to satisfy Krishna, automatically you're going to be satisfied because you're part of Krishna.
How do I satisfy Krishna?
Ah. You've just started. You've come here. You're hearing about Krishna. This is your first time?
More or less, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You'll get to hear more about Krishna. You'll get a chance to chant the Hare Krishna mantra and taste food that's been offered to Krishna. These are all activities pleasing to Krishna.
One last question. Mm-hmm. How do I displease Krishna?
By living like 99% of the people live today.
Thank you.
I think you can see it's not working out, is it?
Not really.
Very good. You've come to the right place, brother.